a lot. It was reminded me of the old days. But if you're not used to it, it really takes a toll. So I think we could see where people do vote for Wemby. I still think the rhetoric is about SGA because the accomplishment of however, like 128 now, 129 games in a row with 20 or more, that's just absurd. It's absurd. It's a lock. And, you know, when it gets broken, I don't know that it's a streak that we'll ever see broken again because anything can happen. And the guy's been remarkably consistent. Jokic is averaging ridiculous numbers and impacting the game in ways that guys just don't impact even when they're superstars. He's that level of player. So I think that'll be the tough thing. And now here's what's to watch for. If he doesn't win it this year and SGA does win it, or Jokic wins it, let's just say it's SGA, it's back-to-back.
For those that care, the gambling markets are SGA is a massive favorite.
Right. So look at next year. Because if he's a favorite again, winning it a third time is almost something that voters shy away from. And you may get people that just go, hey, Wemby could have gotten it last year. He's having the same year this year. He's our guy. They're going to push it. And at that, he will probably be, to start the season, the odds-on favorite to win it, he or Luke, because it'll be that time. But, yeah, he's phenomenal, man. He's everything and more than people said he was. And I was one who was a tad skeptical because of his frame. And the first time I saw him, I went, nope, skepticism's gone. He can take a hit. He's stronger than people thought. He worked on his body. He made sure he could absorb the contact from guys that are 20 pounds heavier than him, but he's still, I mean, just the things he does, it's hard to describe. And it's hard when you're a play-by-play guy to put it into words. When you see a guy at that size making the moves he made, it's like, I don't even know how to describe what he just did, because it's so different than anything we've ever seen.
And that's, yeah, you always just have to leave room for, we've never seen this before. And
no.
And he definitely qualifies. All right, my man, have a great call tomorrow night.
I appreciate you, brother.
That is Eric Hastein, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. We come back. Let's talk about the college basketball coaching carousel. We'll talk about that with Tim next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Tim, you've been tweeting about it, but I wouldn't say maybe it's like certainly not spinning like the coaching carousel was during this football season, but
no.
The college basketball carousel, I think, could start spinning.
Well, there's a big one hanging out there.
I think there are two.
Are you talking about Kansas?
Correct.
Okay, so yes, the retirement.
Although
of Bill,
I think
Self,
if you made me say gun in my head, I think I'd say Self is back.
I think Self is back. I don't think he enjoyed this year. I don't have any insight on that. I just think sometimes when you have the best player, perceived best player in the world, or in college basketball, not in the world, sometimes it's more challenging. And, you know, Cal dealt with that for a while at Kentucky. Some of those teams clicked, some didn't. I think Self is back, is my gut. The Hubert Davis stuff is weird.
I don't even know if it's weird. I think they're trying to finish some paperwork. I mean, Pete Thamel
was their guy.
That is where I start to wonder, because it seems like if you're doing this, you are going to go outside the family, right? Because there is no family member that's available.
So, I don't know who this is, so that always makes me worried, but he's a Chicago-based reporter that apparently just reported that Billy Donovan is expected to walk away after this season. Could Billy D be
Didn't
the
Didn't they
guy?
Just give him an extension?
I don't know. He's made some poor choices. I mean, he walked away from Oklahoma City because he didn't want to rebuild. How'd that work out? I mean, he's doing fine financially. I mean, I would certainly love Billy Donovan's bank account right now, and he's a Hall of Fame coach. But I don't know who the guy is. Like, who's the home run North Carolina guy? Because to your point, they have to go outside the family if they're going to make this move. And I think Van Pelt was on with the Field of 68 guys this weekend or Friday night, and he made a good point, which was, if you're making this, you've already got the guy lined up, right? Like, if you're firing Hubert Davis, and I don't think they should personally, but if you're firing Hubert Davis, you've got your hire ready to go. You're not going to have a Penn State situation on your hands after they fired James Franklin.
So I think you're right.
But I don't know who that guy is.
The only reason why I could say no is it did feel like the emotion of the season led to this decision. With that being said, I do think very highly of Jim Tanner. I don't think Jim Tanner built a remarkable business being an agent by not having plans and not knowing the market.
So he's the GM, right?
Correct. He was like a super agent. So the ones that would be interesting.
Real quick to confirm, Billy Donovan did sign an extension in the summer of last year. It was multi-year. Financial terms were not disclosed.
Because I've heard the Bulls are probably bringing him back.
This has come out the last couple hours, and the reporter is Joe Cowley, and there's growing momentum that Billy Donovan could step away from the Bulls after this season.
All right, so he is with the Chicago Sun-Times.
With a multi-year, the term was not released in that extension for Donovan, but with multi-years, it would have to be a step away with something already kind of lined up, I would think, right?
You could tell me where, if he takes a college job, like the Bulls are not big on paying people to not work for them, but if he takes a job,
I would assume there's a clause.
Probably lets it out.
Right.
So is this the first domino of he would be the guy at North Carolina? Is he having remorse that he turned down Kentucky? Or is he stepping away so with Kentucky maybe opening up next year, he kind of gets to be the hottest free agent out there?
First name in line.
I've also wondered this, though. The last time he coached in college basketball, it was a drastically different enterprise.
Yes, it was. Sure was.
Now, does that mean that he can't coach it? No. But, like, I was thinking about this. Is Nate Oates safer?
I don't think North Carolina would bring Nate Oates as back.
I don't think he would either, but I mean, when you get to this point, aren't you kind of doing the move of, all right, we're in it to win?
So who would be the guys? So I was talking to, we had Matt McCall on the show last night, and I think Matt's really good. Former Florida assistant under Donovan, former Chattanooga and UMass coach, now does work with Field of 68, NBC. And his suspicion was the growing success of Duke is just eating away at the
We mentioned this yesterday, and I think that it's 100% a part of it. The fact that, like, I'm not saying Shire has done like a 10 out of 10, but the fact that they have consistently been good every year, and it looks like that they have gotten the successor thing right when so many other schools don't, that has to eat at them.
So look at the 4-1 seeds. You're not getting any of those coaches. The 2 seeds, you're not getting Kelvin. He's too old. Hurley's not leaving UConn, I don't think. Could you get TJ Otzelberger? Like, would that be a guy that would move the needle for North Carolina fans? And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
I mean, I'm with you. I don't know if that wins the press conference. I mean, they think it's Carolina. Like, I think this is the interesting thing. Does Scott Drew move the needle?
No, not right now.
Like,
he's a national championship winning coach, but his teams have been down. What about,
like, what if Otzelberger loses to Tennessee on, are they Thursday or Friday?
I think they're Thursday.
No, they're the last game of the they're whatever. They're 9:10 our time, 7:10 your time.
Okay, I'm going to give you one more name. We just saw a 63-year-old West Coast Conference coach move.
Yep.
Mark Few, he moves the needle.
I don't think – why would you leave now?
I don't think you would. He's been wooed by a lot of people, but maybe he's seeing the writing on the wall.
I don't think he would do well under the – I think he does really well in a job that is completely in the middle of nowhere.
Or if you're him, do you say, I'm 63 – why not give it one shot? I'm going to have all the resources, all the backing. I still don't think they move on from Hubert Davis. Maybe I'm naive.
Thamel was pretty definitive.
That they are?
Yeah, Thamel on Sunday on college game day.
I take his word over mine.
He was definitive that the only uncertainty is how this goes down.
Like, is there any other name? Like, who are we missing?
I mean,
who in the NBA?
Well, I'm thinking
Brad Stevens. Would he go? Probably not.
No. I don't think Stevens goes. I don't think Jay Wright goes. Do you? So, I don't know whether or not it's justified, but do you throw a dump truck full of cash at Todd Golden? Because Golden apparently was not pleased with how Florida, shall we say, supported him or lack thereof during the accusations.
Yeah. I mean, why not?
I think Golden moves the needle more than Otzelberger.
Oh, yeah. He's a national championship coach.
Now, you also look at it. He went 2-out this year. I think they were 1-out the year before. Like, he does have the national title, but it's not like... Like, that's the thing about Otzelberger. Like, Otzelberger has, like, more sustained success, but... He doesn't have, like, the big hardware.
Or do you, I mean...
I mean, Lakers, what about, like, Hoiberg?
The Lakers apparently sent a boatload of cash at Hurley. Hurley's a Northeast guy. His brother played at Duke. So I don't know if that would matter. I mean, that's the guy you go get. If you can.
I was going to say, though, I think that's the question.
Is UNC better than UConn? Probably. But is it that much better than UConn?
Well, is it also better, though, for a guy that's made his whole life in the Northeast?
Yeah, I mean, North Carolina, to be honest, they're kind of like a quasi-Northeastern school.
Not the power brokers.
True.
The power brokers, they're not.
But you start flashing two rings around. You start flashing two rings around. Screw it. Bring back Roy. He looks bored sitting in the stands. Bring back Roy.
Well, I mean, I told you my joke. You know who we know would look good in Argyle? The man in Fayetteville.
That would be great.
Now, I think he also is happy enough to where you're like, why would I do that? Like, I'm able to
he's
get this.
He's making a boatload of cash.
Making a boatload of cash. Like, look at how happy he seems.
I think Arkansas, yes, they did win a title in the early 90s, but they are thrilled right now, right? They're doing
it's a very. I would argue this. In college basketball terms, it's a very good job because you can win there.
You've got resources.
And they're not, like, for being a sport or a state that doesn't have pro sports and Arkansas, like, sucks up so much oxygen, quality of life and expectations are pretty reasonable for the basketball job. I would actually argue Arkansas football is a harder job.
Oh, 100%, because it's harder to win in that conference. They don't really have much recent history of success, and the expectations are really high. Hey, get us to big time bowl games, get us to the playoff. Now, I mean, Cal's in the Sweet 16 in year two. Kentucky's not. They've made it to the Sweet 16 now two straight years, even though last year's journey there was not easy, and there was some heat, like, oh, look at what they're doing. And then they got there, and now they're there again, and they've got a kid coming in next year to replace Darius Acuff that is from my neck of the woods, went to Paul VI, who I think is the number one team in the country. scored 38-7-7 in their championship game. Like, they'll be just fine with the kid that they're bringing in to replace a superstar in Acuff. So, yeah, I don't think he would leave. How old is he now? 65? He's in his earlier mid-60s.
I want to say when he left Kentucky, he was 63. So that would make him 65.
I mean, Donovan, I think, moves the needle. And maybe that's the guy with this recent report coming out. But, you know, back to your initial...
John is 67. He just turned 67.
Okay, yeah.
But, I mean...
Imagine Cal and Belichick. Oh, that'd be great. Together? Whew.
Oh, man, the promos they would cut. I don't know. Like, that's the other thing, though, is... Is Billy Donovan the best hire you can make?
Probably not. He's been out of the game.
Now,
I think Danny Hurley's the best hire you can make.
Maybe you get into the situation where Carolina recruits itself. All right. So now it's just the coach him up. But, man, he kind of left college basketball because he was getting fed up with it, Ben. Whatever, 12 years ago. How's he going to like this world?
It is weird, though, it hasn't been done yet.
Well, I mean, I guess the other question would be is, should you look more to the NBA as this becomes more professionalized? But weirdly, what we've seen that's kind of worked is, like, go getting, like, G League guys.
Why would an NBA coach want to leave that job? You know what I'm saying? Like, that job is awesome right now. Just coach ball. Like, who would be the guy that, you know, you'd want to go get?
The only argument against the NBA is length of the season.
Sure. But then you're not constantly recruiting and doing all that stuff.
Correct. You just coach. And you're flying, whatever, you know.
I mean, the money's comparable, I'd imagine. Look, North Carolina, I mean, are they going to get the big guy on board? Like, is he fed up? Is he going to be like, I'm gonna get in on this discussion here, Mr. 23? Or is he too busy winning NASCAR races?
It is. Did you see the stat that he was on Fox? He was on Fox more than he was on NBC because Fox was interviewing about the NASCAR, you know, with the races. He had more FaceTime on Fox than he did on NBC.
I love that people actually bought that he was going to show up on NBC. I sniffed that out right from, I'm like, dude, he ain't doing that.
Well, it was so easy to sniff out when they were so vague about the role.
Yeah, he's going to be involved.
It's like, wait.
One interview?
It's like, aren't upfronts next week? Yeah, that's coincidence.
Yeah, we got Jordan. Remember him? Ba-da-da-ba-da-da-ba-da. He was awesome on it. He's back. Not really. But the rest of the cycle, which you kind of hinted at, so Siena goes and gets GMAC.
Syracuse gets GMAC.
I'm sorry.
From Siena.
Yes, Syracuse gets their guy. Once they lost to Duke by 6, I was like, this is over. He's going to Syracuse. He got the job. I don't think he should have, but... That's a discussion for another day. We'll see.
I was thinking about this. Who do you think leaked Hodson turned down Syracuse?
Syracuse.
I agree now. Because I think this was a preordained. I think this
see, we tried.
I think this was they knew what they wanted to do. They wanted Jerry McNamara and they found a way to get Jerry McNamara.
And what did they offer Hodgson? You'll never know.
Correct.
Maybe they offered, yeah, we'll offer you a 1 year for $1 million.
Or, you know, what if, like, they didn't give him an NIL plan? What if they didn't, you know what I mean? Like, the things that a in-demand candidate would want to know, what if they were just vague on it?
Right. I think there was some of that, like, hey, if we get Jerry, it's going to be a win. But let's just throw it out there that we tried to get someone else.
I agree. That's how I think it's gone down.
So Hodgson goes to Providence. I think that's a good hire for Providence. I think he's a really good coach. GMAC goes to Syracuse. The most predictable of all, Jared Calhoun goes to Cincy, where he went to college, coached under Huggins. So another Utah State coach on the move. Here's the one that's starting to bubble up a little bit more. You heard the name that might be headed to Butler?
Might be headed. Oh, the old reset the timeline?
The old parachute out deal. Because he kind of got the, hey, we can't fire you because your buyout's huge.
And we're not spending another cent on basketball.
But you better figure this thing out in year four or you will be fired. And was on Brad Stevens' staff at Butler. Makes a lot of sense. Now, the question is, Butler, they're like, wait, you've kind of been a disaster at Notre Dame. Like, is this going to work here? But that's kind of the old parachute out. Already a couple players have hit the portal. Now, not the bigger players for Notre Dame, but I'm starting to get the sense that that could be coming down the pipeline. That old Shrewsbury does the parachute gig and rolls out of South Bend. Notre Dame, is that really that good of a job?
Well,
and they paid Shrewsbury decent to get him from Penn State.
It just seems to me like Notre Dame right now is focused on we're not going to do anything that could interfere with football.
Correct. They are all in.
And so if you're Shrewsbury going to Butler, I think Butler plays D3 football, so you don't have to worry about that. And I don't know, that makes some sense.
And I think Notre Dame fans, sorry, I had to let the dog out. I think Notre Dame fans would be more than okay with it, because now you're not firing him. You're not paying a buyout, right? So, and then the question would be, does Porter Mosier, who was rumored to be a Notre Dame guy, does he do the parachute out of Oklahoma, even though they played well down the stretch?
I think if you're Porter, when you were able to keep your job, I think he's staying at Oklahoma.
I would agree with that.
You know what I mean? Like
they played good hoops, and
but like they did the whole, you know, we're going to invest in the team, and like Porter Moser's not really known as being scummy. That would be like a scummy move.
But just kind of looking around, so you've got, I mean, what else am I missing?
Well, it's like,
So Arizona State gets Randy Bennett.
Correct.
I think you alluded to that.
And now the guy that literally got to St. Mary's when he was a freshman at St. Mary's, when I was a freshman at Pepperdine, he is now the head coach. They traded one guy from Mesa, Arizona for another.
Think about what you could have been in your life.
Well, no, this is when you start watching guys your own age or younger getting head jobs. For whatever reason, when they get coordinators, like Chris Marv is now going to be the DC at Colorado. Chris is my age. He played at White Station when I played at MUS, and he went to Vanderbilt with one of my buddies. Like, for whatever reason, when they get a DC job, it doesn't feel quite as tough. But when you start seeing guys that are your age getting head jobs, that's when you're like, God, I am just never going anywhere. Like, I just need to pack it up at this point. We also learned McDermott will retire. So Alan Huss, who left High Point to be the coach in waiting, takes over. You mentioned Calhoun. Did you mention that you think Utah State's going to swing back around?
Be my guess. They go back to Craig Smith. So I know people probably aren't too familiar with Utah State hoops outside of the game they played against.
Well, Tigers play them again next year.
So this whole circle started with Craig Smith. So Craig Smith came in, he came from South Dakota, I think, won pretty well in 3 years, left to go to Utah. They hired Ryan Odom, at the time was still at UMBC. He goes there for 2 years. He leaves, goes to VCU. Now he's the UVA coach. They hired Danny Sprinkle from, I think, Montana State.
That sounds right.
And then he was there for a year. He goes to Washington.
And now he's on the hot seat.
Jared Calhoun comes in for 2 years, and he's rolls out to go to Cincinnati. My guess is that they circle back, but I don't have that on strong It's a strong guess. I know Craig Smith wants to get back into coaching. He was out this year, so I think he would imagine he's pushing for it. I know he still lives in Utah, but maybe they go find the next mid-major coach that'll be there for 2 years and leaves.
All right, anything else carousel-wise?
I don't think so. The one that...
I am curious to see what USF does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I'm curious to see if Nolan Smith continues this meteoric rise.
Charlotte hired Wes Miller.
Yeah, so Wes tipped his hand when he agreed to the buyout from Cincinnati, the lump sum payment.
Yeah, so he goes to Charlotte. Probably a good hire. We'll see if it plays.
He's just now going all across the UNC system. He was at Greensboro. Now he's back at Charlotte.
He just needs to go to Wilmington.
Correct. although I think Wilmington. They're not as
good. If you had to guess of Kansas and UNC, you think UNC opens and Kansas does not?
I think UNC is opening. Kansas, I think, yes. That would be my final answer.
Okay.
All right, let's take a quick break. We come back. Let's take a look at those Sweet 16 games. Take a look at it from the betting angle and more. We'll talk about it next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Tim, we begin the Sweet 16 on Thursday. I believe it'll be at 6:10 Central Time, so 4:10 Pacific Time. We'll start with Purdue and Texas. That's in San Jose. We're doing that weird thing again where we're starting the San Jose, the West Coast game early, so there'll be thousands of empty seats at that. Then we will go to Houston at 6:30 on TBS/True TV. Nebraska and Iowa. Then at 8:45, we have Arizona and Arkansas. That's in San Jose. And at 9:05, we have Houston and Illinois. That also in Houston. Then on Friday, we will start at 6:10 on CBS with Duke and St. John's. That is in D.C. 6:35 on TBS, we have Michigan and Alabama in Chicago. 8:45 on CBS, UConn and Michigan State in D.C. And then at 9:10 on TBS True TV, we have Iowa State and Tennessee in Chicago. I did a little bit of research before the show. So last year we mentioned favorites in the Sweet 16 were 8-0 straight up. However, they were 4-4 against the spread. Favorites of 8 points or more were 1-2. And Tim vividly remembers the one because he had Michigan and Auburn came back late and covered that number. I think it was 8.5. In 2024, the favorites in the Sweet 16 were 3-5, both straight up and against the spread. So all three favorites that won covered, all five underdogs won outright. In 2023, in the Sweet 16, favorites were 4-4 straight up and against the spread. And in 2022, favorites were 4-4 straight up, 3-5 against the spread. Since 2022, favorites are 19-13 straight up, 14-18 against the spread.
So I did bet, I've made two bets so far, and the first one, so I bet the under in St. John's Duke. That was 143.5 on Sunday. It's come down a little bit. I also think the first half under could be of interest. I think that's 66.5 right now. So
is that your Stanford Steve play?
What's that?
Stanford Steve, big on the first time in the arena.
Oh.
First half unders. I think he said something like 66%.
Ooh, nice. That was not, but
that also felt like a Stanford Steve nugget that the Bear gave him.
It might be. The Bear, by the way, just put out his most recent little morsels there. Always love the Bear. Bear Bites.
Bear Bites, baby.
But that's on Friday. Thursday, I'm going to bet against Purdue again. I didn't get there with Miami. Take a step back. I bet Purdue to win the Big Ten tournament because I had a feeling. I thought the bracket was, they didn't have Michigan on their side. They didn't have Wisconsin on their side. They have Illinois on their side. I think Illinois was on the other side of the bracket too. So I thought the bracket kind of broke well for them. And there was just like a sneaky suspicion that this veteran team would come together after a disappointing year. Now you're in the Sweet 16. People are kind of back in on Purdue. Like, oh, they figured it out, right? I kind of look at this Texas team as one that, yes, has played, I think, as was it you that pointed it out? They basically have played two West Coast Conference teams.
Yes.
Because BYU didn't have Richie Saunders, so they weren't at full strength.
And they used to be in the WCC. When I was in college, they were in the WCC.
Right. And then, of course, they played Gonzaga, and that was a spot that I really liked. I look at this Texas team, though. I think Swain is playing really well. Vokatitis, if he could stay out of trouble, the big fella for Texas.
Have to shoot free throws.
Yeah. Oh, God. He's got that funky thing, doesn't he?
And he just, like, kept missing. He just kept missing. They legitimately kept, like, BYU in that game.
So let's go back to the Purdue win over Miami.
All right.
So they end up pulling away, and they get the win, and unfortunately for me, they get the cover. But I like to look at how the game played out and how well one particular team played. Now, there is a caveat, which I will be certainly willing to listen to regarding the play for Braden Smith. But this team on Sunday was out of their minds from an efficiency standpoint, and it catapulted them into number one spot. 53% from the field, 57% from three, 95% from the line. Jared Burson pointed this out. Purdue, third team in NCAA tournament history to shoot 50, 50, 95 in a game. So do we get a little bit of regression from Purdue? I think it's possible. I think Texas could give him a scare. I'm not saying win the game outright, but I think 7 points is a decent amount to be laying here if you're Purdue.
According to Chris Felica, Sean Miller's teams have been an underdog 13 times in the tournament. They've covered 10 of 13 and have won 5 outright. Texas is currently a 7-point dog against Purdue.
All right, Bear, thank you. Backing me again. That's the only one I bet so far on Thursday. We talked about Arkansas a little bit earlier. Cal, I always tend to like him in the dog role. I think you made the really good point of what's Brazil's status and the depth. They just don't have a ton. And Arizona, as amazing as Acuff is, and he's our guy, I mean, they got pretty damn good guards, too. They got the Big 12 player of the year and Jaden Bradley, who's a veteran. And then they got Burries, who's a lottery pick. So it's not like Darius Acuff in the backcourt of Arkansas is going to be overwhelmingly better than what you have for Arizona.
Since leaving UMass, John Calipari has been an underdog 11 times in a tournament game, and never bigger than 6.5 points. His teams have won 7 of the games outright, 6-2 in the last 8, and he's 8-2-1 against the spread. Arkansas is currently an 8-point dog to Arizona.
I mean, look, I'll end up being on Arkansas. I know myself. I'll probably bet Arkansas. I have a future on Arkansas to win the title, which if they're able to win this game, I feel a little bit better about it. But Arizona... Whew, buddy, that's an impressive bunch of gentlemen on that roster. Those are some big dudes.
I think I want to go SpongeBob SquarePants. You ready?
Okay.
How does that game stay out of the 80s?
It's a good question. I mean, you've got the highest total on the board at 166.5, so it's high for a reason, but I mean, Arkansas did go over against High Point.
Pace obviously matters, but
went
like
over for Hawaii too.
It's already down to like that. Just feels like that game's getting into the 80s.
Projection from KenPom is 87-79. Arizona, of course.
And then you could get late.
Arizona, I guess they don't shoot a ton of threes. They are a pretty up-tempo team. Both these teams, from a tempo standpoint, are very high. Neither of them live by the three, but yet they're both pretty good at shooting threes. Like, Arkansas is the 10th best three-point shooting team in the country, but they only shoot 32% of their possessions end with a three.
I mean, I think Acuff right now is like at 45%.
Acuff's 45, Malik Thomas is 42.
Arizona has lost each of its last 5 games in the Sweet 16 or later, dating back to 2015, a Sweet 16 win. 4 of those losses came as a favorite, dating back to its 2001 loss to Duke in the national championship game. Arizona is 5-13 in Sweet 16 games or later, 3-6 as a favorite, and that's straight up. That's not against the number.
Is Carter Knox going to come back? I know there was some thoughts that he was going to try to give it a go. This is what Jackson Fuller, Arkansas reporter, said last week. Carter Knox is here in Portland, said rehab is going great, really wants to try and be ready for the Sweet 16, but he's taking it day by day.
I'm still seeing...
Like, if he's out there, is he really... Does he help that much? I don't know.
I mean, it helps in the sense that it gives them some depth, but, like, what is his... Like, what's his form going to be?
Yeah. I don't know. I go back and I'm going back and forth on that one because I love this Arkansas team. I love Cal as a dog. But you do just wonder, does Arkansas just run out of gas against Arizona?
Or, you know, it's just, I mean, we've seen Arkansas, like, the Florida game.
Yeah, that was.
Like, what happens if they get into a performance where, or they get into a game where Acuff is just good, but not great?
Yeah, do you need Acuff to be out of this world? By the way, back to your point of being, as you said, SpongeBob SquarePants.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the Alabama game. And I know it went to triple overtime, but before we got there, I believe we were tied at 95.
Yes.
So that's over. Missouri, 94-86. A&M, 99-84. Florida, 111-77.
Still
Texas,
over.
Texas, 105-85. Missouri, in overtime, 88-84. That game would have gone
that under. Would have gone under, yeah.
That was 74-all at the end of regulation. Oklahoma, 82-79. Ole Miss, 93-90, but that was in overtime. That was 79-all at the end of regulation. 86-75 over Vandy. 97-78 over Hawaii, and 94-88 over High Point. So they've scored 86 to 90 pretty much every game outside of the Florida game where Florida went for a buck 11. So to your point, it does. I hate playing overs because it just feels like everybody in the world's going to play an over, but I can't play an under in that game.
I played one over last week.
Did it hit?
It was Arkansas and High Point.
Well, there you go. Want to know, baby.
But like you, like I think I texted you. I'm so wired to take unders. I initially, when I put the bet in, I bet under, and then my buddy goes, "Hey, make sure you pushed over." And I looked and I was like, "Oh, thank God." Cuz like I was able to cash out and then not lose any juice or anything, and then I was like, "I wanted the over."
The other two games in Houston, I'm having a hard time with Houston, Illinois. Market just ticked it down to 3. I kind of want to bet Houston, but that kind of feels SpongeBob SquarePants to me.
I was at the point where I was like, I think I kind of want Illinois.
I mean, there's 3.5 still out there.
Let's see.
Are they tough enough? It does feel like Houston right now, the defense, because we've been kind of critical of the defense. Right?
I could also kind of emotionally hedge, because let me tell you what, if Houston advances deep, I'm going to win a lot of money.
Yeah, so I kind of got a unique situation going where I've got Illinois to win the title at 15-1 and Houston to win the region at plus 255, so... I'm in decent shape one way or the other. Illinois would have to get, you know, creative in the Final Four, assuming they beat the winner of Iowa, Nebraska. But since they lost to Kansas in that ugly game on the road, held Colorado to 62, Baylor to 64, Oak State 75, not great there. Big 12 tournament, 66 BYU, 47 Kansas. Arizona got 79 on them. They held Idaho to 47 and Texas A&M Buckyball to 57.
So the closest comp is obviously Michigan State, and they were fine in that game. Like, they didn't close it out, but they were fine. I don't know. It feels like everyone. It feels like that's just like a fade.
Well, until Houston's got the home court, you
correct?
Know, and like all that. So, Friday, man. Friday's gonna be. Oof. The DC regional is outrageous. St. John's, Duke, Sparty, UConn. I already mentioned I bet the under in Duke St. John's. It does feel like everybody is already telling you St. John's is going to beat Duke, right?
I agree. Bear had a note, though. Let's see. In the 22 games, Duke has played in the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, or Final Four, beginning in the 2024 season. Duke is 20-2 straight up, 15-7. The only two losses in that span is Duke last year in the Final Four to Houston and to NC State. I think they were both, it was like, no, here it is. Duke has won its last five Sweet 16 games, none of the five wins by more than 7 points.
I'm not going to touch that game from a side standpoint, but I can't get there on St. John's. I just feel like.
I'm with you.
I think St. John's, they're just going to implement. I mean, Bryce Hopkins went 6 of 9 from three. The guy's like a 28% three-point shooter.
I think I'm going to talk myself into Tennessee again.
If Joshua Jefferson's not playing, I think you got to bet Tennessee.
I think I'm talking myself into Tennessee. All right, my man, we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, enjoy the games, man. See ya.
That is Tim Murray of VSiN. When we come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George, today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. Let's go to Dan Hurley about the upcoming matchups this Friday in D.C. It'll be a live building. Obviously, we got to try to support each other, they being UConn and St. John.
Yeah, of course. Come on.
I think it's pretty brutal on Twitter and social between our fan bases, but I think we've got to try to come together on Friday night against our opponents so that we could have a bloodbath on Sunday. Does that sound like a guy doesn't want to play Duke?
That is exactly someone who does not want to play Duke.
I want to thank Tim Murray and Eric Hastein for being on the program. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Tim, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.